The rear door of the bar spilled into a cluttered alley. A mountain of garbage bags was heaped against the grimy brick wall. Swinging Chester by the bottle, Remo tossed the thug onto the trash heap. Tortilli bounced from foot to foot a few yards down the alley from Remo. His body language screamed, "Retreat!"
I think they saw us.
They didn't.
Tortilli's shoulders relaxed.
Until I waved them over.
You what? You're kidding, right, man?
Remo held up a finger.
Hold that thought.
He hadn't even lowered his hand before the rusted door burst open. The three hoods he'd waved to from across the bar spilled into the alley.
Guns!
Quintley Tortilli became a flash of purple polyester as he dove behind a cluster of trash bags. All three weapons were drawn before the thugs had even bounded out the door. Although they twisted alertly, none of the men had expected their target to be standing a foot from the door. Before they knew it, Remo was among them. He danced down the line, swatting guns from outstretched hands. At the same time, his flying feet sought brittle kneecaps. Guns skipped merrily away along the soggy alley floor, accompanied by the sound of popping patellas. When the men fell, Remo was already pivoting on one leg. A single sweeping heel punished three foreheads. All three men dropped face first to the ground. As the life sighed out of them, Remo turned to Chester Gecko. Chester was attempting to sit up on the pile of heaped trash, blood-filled bottle still dangling from his nose.
That was a preview. Time for the feature presentation.
Chester tried to scurry backward up the garbage mountain. Bags tore open beneath his kicking heels, spilling their rotting contents into water-filled potholes.
Wait! Wait, I know more!
When Remo paused, Chester sensed his opportunity. But Tortilli suddenly popped back up from behind some garbage.
Whoa, you are heavy duty.
Sensing the end of the battle, the director had just come crawling into view. His eyes darted from the trio of bodies near the door back to Remo.
I am going to option your story.
Put a sock in it, Kubrick.
Remo returned his attention to Chester Gecko.
Spill it.
The one what we did was just a little job. I know the guy who got hired to plant a bunch of bombs. They were hired to blow up the whole studio.
Remo glanced at Quintley Tortilli. The director's bald fist face was drawn into a puzzled frown.
Cabbage head?
No, they're small potatoes. This was a Hollywood studio. It's going down today. We arranged the bomb supplies.
When he nodded to his dead friends, his expression weakened.
Where'd you hear this?
The guy who told me already got paid.
Remo's stomach had twisted into a cold knot the instant Hollywood was mentioned.
What studio?
Chester sniffled. He winced as he inadvertently sucked a noseful of bloody beer back into his mouth.
Taurus?
It was the last word he ever spoke. Quintley Tortilli didn't even see Remo move. In a mere sliver of time, the dangling beer bottle had swung up and launched forward. Facial bones surrendered to the thick glass spear, puckering Chester's face in at the center. As the hood collapsed to the garbage heap, beer bottle skewering his brain, Quintley Tortilli shook his head. More of a reaction to Chester's revelation than to the killer's abrupt death.
Taurus! Man, they've taken their hits over the last few years, but kablamo, this has got to be the mother of them all. You know, Remo?
Tortilli found that he was alone. Glancing around, he spotted Remo racing toward the mouth of the alley, arms and legs pumping in furious, urgent concert. At Chester's revelation, unseen by Quintley Tortilli, a rare emotion had sprung full bloom on the cruel face of Remo Williams. And that emotion was fear. In the wake of the Oklahoma City bombing, tightened federal regulations had made it increasingly difficult to purchase massive quantities of fertilizer without proof of need. This was deemed necessary to keep terrorists from visiting explosive death on another unsuspecting domestic target. But difficult wasn't the same as impossible. Lester Craig could attest to that. As he drove the large yellow Plotts rental truck, he grinned at his seatmate, William Scott Kane.
You realize we've got enough shit back there to take out half a city block?
William ignored him. A few minutes later, he flicked his gaze up at the gate leading to the studio.
Guard.
Lester had met William the day they'd started work on this project. Lester didn't like his partner at all. Lester was more of a good old boy type. His passenger was more of an Ivy Leaguer, whose snobbishness was never more evident than in the condescending way he gave out commands. Guard. Lester felt that William Scott Kane meant that simple five-letter monosyllabic word to sound like an insult.
I see him, smug little bastard.
They were at the north gate of Taurus Studios in Hollywood. The high white wall of the motion picture studio ran in a virtually unbroken line all around the complex. Lester steered up the slight incline in the road, where the high walls curved around to the simple guard shack. They stopped at the plain wooden barricade. Lester rolled down his window.
Passes.
The attitudes of studio guards traditionally ran hot and cold. Hot was reserved for celebrities and executives. For the likes of Lester and his companion, the attitude of all guards bordered on hostile. Lester flashed each of their laminated cards. Once the guard was satisfied, he leaned back into his booth. A moment later, the gate rose high in the air.
You wouldn't ask Tom Hanks for his pass.
Thank you kindly.
Lester smiled at the guard, for what he knew would be the last time. The 2.5-ton truck with its cargo of ammonium nitrate eased past the uplifted wooden arm and headed deep into the Taurus lot. The master of Shinanju stomped his sandaled feet angrily as he whirled onto the exterior set. It was a mock-up of a New York slum. Post-production computer effects would erase the large Taurus water tower that rose proudly in the background.
I cannot leave you for a moment!
Chun's rage sent shockwaves of fear through the gathered cast and crew. The hems of his scarlet kimono billowed about his ankles as he flounced up to the assistant director. His hazel eyes were fire.
I take but one rice break, and the instant my back is turned, you lapse into indolence. Why are you not working, Gold Brick?
Arlen Dougal was clearly petrified. At Chun's typhoon-like appearance, he broke away from the female assistant he'd been talking to, backing from the fearful wraith in red.
It's not my fault!
It is never your fault, slothful one. Nor will it be my fault when I remove your sluggish head from your lazy neck.
Chun glared at the comely young assistant.
Please, let me explain.
Have you halted production on my epic saga to chatter with this hussy? Hear me, one and all, for I do issue a decree. From this moment forth, there shall be no females on this set. Remember to tell this to this slugabed's successor.
Mr. Chun.
Silence, harlot.
It really isn't my fault. The extras aren't here.
Chun's eyes narrowed. He spun from the director and his assistant, scanning the gathered crowd. Most of the faces he saw belonged to behind-the-scenes crew. Very few appeared to be actual performers.
Where are my overcasts? The scene we filmed today requires a multitude.
They haven't shown up yet.
Chun wheeled on him, aiming an accusing fingernail.
This is your doing. Your laxness infects the lower orders like a plague.
Arlen ducked behind his assistant, grabbing her by the shoulders. Positioning the woman like a human shield between himself and Chun, he ducked and wove fearfully.
Well, I think they might be afraid.
Afraid of what?
Of all the tension on the set.
Chun's face flushed to angry horror, causing Arlen to nearly faint from added fear.
Are you creating tension on my set as well?
The woman Arlen hid behind winced as the man's panicked grip grew tighter.
They are here. I saw a couple of them not 5 minutes ago. They were over by Soundstage 1.
For an instant, Chun seemed torn. As the old man stood stewing, Arlen saw his opportunity. Releasing his assistant, he began tiptoeing away in an awkward squat. He got no more than 4 teetering feet before a blur of scarlet swept before him. A dagger-like nail pressed his throat. When he looked up, he dared not gulp, lest he risk piercing his Adam's apple. Chun's eyes were molten steel.
Know you this, Liabed. Your skills alone preserve your life.
Suddenly dropping Arlen and spinning to face the crew, he scowled.
Make ready, malingerers. I will see to the missing overcasts.
As the old Korean marched away, the gathered throng dared breathe again. Arlen Dougal dropped to his knees. After touching his throat with his fingertips, he relaxed. No blood. The tension drained from his shoulders. He watched as the wizened figure disappeared around a building mock-up. Unbeknownst to Arlen, the tiny Asian was marching straight into the blast zone of the first of 6 powerful truck bombs. Remo stood anxiously at the bank of phones in the bustling terminal building at Seattle-Tacoma International Airport. Beyond the huge tinted windows at his back, massive idle aircraft sulked along the tarmac. Far off, a 747 rose into the bleak sky. Remo was on hold with Tora Studios for 5 minutes before someone in the movie company's executive offices finally deigned to answer.
Tora Studios, this is Kelly. How may I direct your call?
Get me Bindle or Marmelstein.
Who's calling?
Tell him it's Remo.
First name or last?
First.
Last name, please.
Remo stopped dead. He couldn't remember the cover name he'd been using the year before while on assignment in Hollywood.
Remo will do.
Oh, like Cher. Goodbye.
Wait, what about their assistant, Ian?
He was hired by Fox to produce the next Barbra Streisand picture.
Okay, there's a movie being made there right now. I know the screenwriter, just...
Remo slammed the phone down into the cradle. The receiver cracked and split open at the midpoint between earpiece and mouthpiece. Strings of multicolored wires were all that held the dangling plastic receiver together. He stood there for a moment, frozen. He had to warn Chun. Smith. He'd call Smith. Remo hurried to the next phone. Scooping up the receiver, he quickly began to punch in the special code to Cure's Falcroft headquarters when he froze. He couldn't call Smith, not without telling him why Chun was at Taurus. And if Remo blabbed to Smith about the Master of Shinunju's upcoming movie, the old Korean would resolve to make Remo's every waking moment a living hell for the rest of his life, if he was lucky. Even if he told Smith, that was no guarantee of guarding Chun's safety. If the Cure director sent a swarm of police to Taurus, the bombers might turn skittish. Cops could spook the terrorist into setting off the bombs sooner.
Damn it, Chun. Why do you have to complicate everything?
Remo snapped the next phone down in its cradle. He spun away from the bank of phones. The instant he did, he spied a familiar purple leisure suit bobbing and weaving toward him through the main terminal concourse. Quintley Tortilli had caught up with him in the parking lot at the dregs. On the way to the airport, Remo had been in too much of a hurry to throw him out of the car. A few heads turned as Tortilli shoved through the crowd, waving a pair of airline tickets over his head.
We're all set. 2 tickets on the next flight to L.A. We got about 7 minutes.
Yeah, and the bombs could go off before that.
But maybe not. This is a business charter jet. We can be in L.A. in an hour and a half, maybe less.
And be stacked up over LAX for 2 days.
There had to be another way. Every minute in the sky, worrying about the Master of Shinunju would be torture.
I can get us cleared to land as soon as we get there.
How?
Please, I'm me.
What kind of perks do you get when you make a good movie?
Before Tortilli could mention a word about his People's Choice Award, Remo reached over and grabbed an extra-wide purple lapel. Dragging the director behind him, he sprinted for the departure gate.
You there!
The sharp words sliced into Lester Craig's marrow. He pretended he didn't hear the voice. Averting his eyes, he continued walking briskly with William alongside the massive building that was Soundstage 1.
Hold!
Lester wouldn't have listened under ordinary circumstances, never would have listened under these particular conditions. But at the moment, the fury in that voice was more frightening to him than the jury-rigged truck bomb he was fleeing. Lester stopped dead. William stumbled into him.
What do we do?
Remember the extra who tried to run from him yesterday? Traction for 6 months. Minimum.
Like flies in amber, the two men remained stock still as the Master of Shinunju bounded up behind them.
Are you two layabouts not employed as overcasts on my magnificent film?
They knew better than to lie. The two men nodded dumbly.
That man's laziness is a disease.
Actually...
The word was barely out before long-nailed hands appeared from the voluminous sleeves of Chun's kimono.
Silence!
Angry swats peppered the faces and heads of both extras.
Return to work immediately, or you will never breathe in this town again.
They didn't need to be told a second time. Turning from the furious, slapping dervish, the two men ran off in the direction of the dummy New York exterior. In spite of the knowledge that in less than 2 hours, a massive, earth-shaking explosion would reduce the entire set and the studio on which it sat to smoking black rubble. The charter jet skimmed over the border between Oregon and California with steady, confident speed. In the cabin, Remo watched the skimpy white film of clouds dissipate beneath the sleek, gently shuddering wings. Glinting sunlight illuminated tense lines on his hard face. Quintley Tortilli had gone to the cockpit while they were still over Washington. To Remo's relief, he didn't return for a large chunk of the flight. Only when they were flying over California's Salmon Mountains did the young director wander back down the aisle. Tortilli plopped into the seat next to Remo.
I'm back.
Remo continued to stare out at the wing.
I'm thinking of doing a disaster movie on a plane.
It's been done.
Not with curse words. I plan on using a lot of them. Every other word will be an F word. I apologize in advance. I know you don't like that kind of language.
What?
Remo frowned, finally turning from the wing.
You don't like swear words. You made it clear when you were strangling me. But when I use swear words in my movie, it's like poetry. All the critics say so.
Remo couldn't even remember what he had said to the director at their first meeting. He decided he didn't really care. He turned back to the window.
Anyway, the airplane movie is just one idea I'm working on. Do you realize I've got 17 sequels in production for my werewolf movie from noon till night?
I'm sure whoever invented Roman numerals is committing suicide right now.
Of course, the first five sequels tanked, but we're bound to hit with one of them. Say, do you remember that invasion trouble in Hollywood last year? All those tanks and troops from that Arab country? I forget the name.
In spite of himself, Remo found that he was being drawn in. It was probably good to get his mind off Chun.
Ebla. Yeah, I remember.
That's it! Well, something you might not have heard about was the bombs. There's a rumor that the terrorists wired all of Hollywood to explode. Boom! Everything gone, just like that!
Remo, the man who had stopped those self-same bombs from going off, just looked at him.
No kidding.
Oh, sure! Why? It was kept quiet afterward. I think the government was embarrassed about letting all those tanks and troops and explosives into the country. They gave him a pass because they thought it was part of a movie.
Is this like one of your movies, or do you have a point?
Oh, yeah, I do. The first movie of the summer season is a make-or-break actioner from Taurus based on those events. Die Down 4, Don't or Die.
They turned all that into a movie?
Well, it's a fictionalized account. A lone cop is dropped into the middle of the occupation and has to fight his way out. It's gonna be a blockbuster. Opens 2 weeks before Memorial Day.
Did it ever occur to whoever's responsible that it's an incredibly bad taste to capitalize on an invasion of America?
Bad what?
Oh, for crying out loud. Does Hollywood at least get blown up?
Well, among other things.
Good.
My point is, in the movie, the terrorists smuggle the explosives into the studio lots. Ring any bells?
Remo frowned. He'd been so concerned with the Master of Shinanju that he hadn't thought about how all this might relate to his current assignment. Worse, it took Quintley Tortilli to explain it to him.
They're copying the movie.
I guess Cabbage Head wasn't mainstream enough. They branched out from indies to summer blockbusters.
Remo considered the implications of what Tortilli was saying. Summer movies were notoriously big on mindless destruction. If the same people responsible for duplicating the plot points from the small Seattle film company had moved on to big-budget Hollywood films, the real-world terror could have just shifted from the equivalent of a firecracker to a nuclear bomb. Literally. Beside Remo, Quintley Tortilli seemed unfazed by his own deadly deduction.
Die Down 4. Now that was some action that'll knock your socks off. The cop is the same one from the first three movies, and he has to run through Hollywood as well as other parts of the country fighting terrorists and defusing bombs. Oh man, it's wall-to-wall action.
Can't you people make a single summer movie without blowing something up?
Nah, you need explosives. Each big action sequence adds at least 10 million to the domestic gross, and they eat up the stuff overseas. My theory is, the more bombs you have going off in a movie, the less dialogue. If no one's talking, foreigners can forget they're watching Americans.
Again, Tortilli was making sense. It was unnerving.
Die Down 4 is so loaded with explosives, Lance Wallace, he's the star, barely has to open his mouth. Which is a good thing if you've ever seen him act, but don't tell him I said that. I directed him in Penny Dreadful, the guy's a loose cannon. If he heard what I really thought of him, he'd probably shoot me and then claim he thought I was one of the IRA terrorists.
What IRA terrorists?
They're the villains in Die Down.
I thought you said it was based on what happened in Hollywood last year.
It is.
Those maniacs weren't IRA, they were Eblins.
And Arab villains are a big no-no in movies. You can only use white guys. We've replaced the Arabs with a fringe IRA group led by a Fey Englishman.
That's insane! An Englishman is the last person on Earth a fringe faction of the IRA would listen to.
Hey, Hollywood only reflects reality. Therefore, anything produced in Hollywood must be reality. Therefore, the Arab terrorists must really have been IRA. Maybe they had suntans.
Remo had known it couldn't last. Tortilli was starting to sound like Tortilli again. Blinking wearily, he turned away from the director.
Here's some Hollywood advice. Every second of screen time doesn't have to be filled with dialogue.
Is that a polite way of saying shut up?
Remo didn't answer. Face concerned, he stared unseeing out the small window. Quintley Tortilli eventually grew bored. Getting up from his seat, he wandered up the aisle. He found a stewardess to talk to for the rest of the trip to Los Angeles. When he asked her for her number, he told the woman it was all in the name of research. He was thinking of doing a movie where the main character was a female flight attendant. Tortilli was sure it would make a ton of money. The red studio Jeep with its white striped cloth canopy roof tore off 57th Street onto Broadway. Driving crazily through the dodging crowd, it came to a screeching halt in the middle of Times Square. The vehicle had been built with no doors. Oh! Through the wide opening behind the driver's seat flew two frightened blurs. The pair of men slid to a flesh-raking stop at the edge of the crowd. Several bruised hands reached down to help the shaking men to their feet. The master of Shinanju emerged from the jeep.
These are the last.
He had enlisted a driver to help him locate the rest of the missing extras. Luck proved to be on his side. The extras had all been located in the vicinity of six very similar trucks that were parked all around the studio lot. There was a total of only 9 men. All of them seemed afraid to move away from one another. The two new arrivals blended in with the huddled group. Chun scanned the line of men, turning with fresh disapproval to Arlen Dougal.
Why are there not more? I have been to the vile city after which this fabrication is patterned. Hordes fill its fetid streets.
This is after the first bombing. Panics gripped the city. Most people are afraid to go out.
Chun allowed a nod of bland acceptance. Padding over, he took up a sentry post behind the AD, hands thrust deep inside his kimono sleeves. He glowered at the crowd. Finishing a notation on his working copy, Arlen looked up from his script.
Okay, we've wasted enough time already, so I want this thing done fast, and I want it done right.
Or else.
Arlen flinched, then forged ahead.
We've gotten strong first takes the last couple of days, so let's try and nail it down out of the gate.
Or the next nails you will see will be those being hammered into your coffins.
Arlen couldn't take this much longer. Everyone's nerves had been rubbed raw by this maniac screenwriter. The backseat driving and constant threats were already more than he could bear. It was worse than if they'd hired Kevin Costner to star. It would help morale if they could get the old man off the set, even if it was just for an hour or two. But his vanity was such that he didn't trust Arlen alone for a minute. A thought popped into the assistant director's head.
People.
He wheeled to face the tiny Korean.
Mr. Chun, you're right.
Of course I am. What is it that I am correct about this time?
People, we do need more on the streets. A bomb scare wouldn't keep everyone inside, not in New York. The bravest, wisest, handsomest people would still go outside.
Perhaps, if I needed to.
Exactly. You're wasted behind the scenes. You belong in front of the camera.
Do you really think so?
Absolutely.
Wardrobe!
One of the wardrobe mistresses hurried forward.
I want Mr. Chun outfitted with an appropriate costume. I want him to look perfect, so be sure to take your time. You got that? Haste makes waste.
Is there something wrong with your eye?
Arlen stopped his frantic winking.
I was merely blinded by your dazzling charisma.
On the sidewalk, the sweating extras seemed thrilled at the thought of Chun leaving. All 9 simultaneously glanced at their watches.
I understand, sir. Mr. Chun, would you please return to the jeep?
She directed Chun toward the jeep he'd commandeered. The master of Shinanju was only too delighted to go.
I cannot wait to tell Remo. I have been discovered.
As Chun got in the back, the woman climbed in next to the driver. A moment later, they were zipping back in the direction from which Chun had come mere minutes before.
Oh, thank God. Next film I work on, no writer.
Script in hand, he hurried over to his assistant. Remo knew they were dangerously close to Hollywood airspace when the co-pilot and navigator came back to discuss the scripts they'd each written. Tortilli took their numbers and shooed them back to the cockpit. Not only did the director arrange to have their plane land immediately upon arrival over Los Angeles International Airport, but he'd also used the phone on the jet to call ahead for transportation. A long black limousine was waiting for them on the tarmac. They were speeding away from the sleek aircraft less than 30 seconds after they deplaned. Tortilli leaned forward and tapped on the driver's shoulder.
Any news about Taurus?
Taurus? Are they still in business?
In the back seat, Tortilli glanced to Remo.
Guess that means it hasn't blown up yet, huh?
Hope tripped in Remo's chest.
Driver, put on the radio.
There's one back there, sir.
Remo looked down on the row of knobs and buttons arranged on the seat panel. It looked more complicated than the cockpit of the plane he'd just left behind. He saw a TV screen set into the console. Remo opted for this over the radio. He flipped a switch. A panel opened over an ice bucket. He hit another button. The sunroof slid open, revealing sunny blue California sky.
Just put on the damn radio.
The driver did as he was told.
Can you believe that?
In other news, a certain starlet was caught at curbside near an exclusive bistro emerging from her limo, not wearing socks that matched. How embarrassing. We'll tell you who it was that the fashion police had to send to jail right after a word from Big Bucks Coffee. Poco, Alto, or Immenso, you just can't get enough caffeine, the legal stimulant.
Shut it off.
No news is good news, right?
Remo just sank glumly back into the plush seat. His heart thrummed an anxious chorus. As he tapped nervously on the seat, his eyes alighted on the car's phone. He could have called Smith. Under any other circumstances, he would have called him without hesitation. But thanks to Chun, he couldn't. This was all Chun's fault.
Old egomaniac.
What?
When he glanced at Quintley Tortilli, his gaze was immediately pulled beyond the director. There was a car parked next to them. Remo suddenly realized they'd stopped.
Hey, driver, hurry up!
I'm sorry, sir. The freeway's clogged.
Craning his neck over the driver's shoulder, Remo saw that it was true. Bumper-to-bumper traffic extended as far as the eye could see. At this rate, it would take forever to get to Taurus. By the time he got there, anything could have happened.
Damn it, Chun.
Tortilli shot him a worried glance.
Did you say Chun?
Yeah, why?
Oh, no reason.
He tugged the creases from the knees of his purple pants, then leaned forward. He wrapped his knuckles on the lip of the lowered privacy screen.
Hurry up!
When he glanced back at Remo, his smile was weak. The wardrobe trailer for Chun's film had been stuffed mostly with police uniforms gathered from the main wardrobe department of Taurus Studios. Since the film wasn't a period piece, the street clothes the bit players and extras wore onto the lot were generally usable for any given scene. Even so, there were still a few costumes other than uniforms hanging on the racks. These mostly consisted of ordinary suits. The wardrobe mistress directed the master of Shenanju to one of these. She held out a double-breasted suit.
It'll be a little big on you, but we can fix you up.
Chun looked first at the suit, then at the woman, as if she'd just asked him to crawl into the belly of a dead horse.
You are joking. I will not wear that.
The wardrobe mistress swallowed nervously.
It's just a suit, sir.
Just is correct. The master of Shenanju does not wear just and anything. The garment defines the man. I am defined by more than just a just.
Spinning, he marched boldly over to the racks of police uniforms.
I would wear one of these.
At first, she thought he was kidding. After all, he'd make about as convincing a police officer as Don Knotts. But when she saw his withering glare, she wiped the remaining smile from her face. She replaced the plain gray business suit on the rack.
I guess that's okay. But any of those would have to be taken in to fit you as well.
Yes, yes.
He stroked his wisp of a beard as he made his way down the line of blue uniforms. The wardrobe mistress trailed behind him. She'd indulge the little man, even though it didn't really matter. Whatever he picked out, it would absolutely not make it into the finished film. She was only supposed to keep the old nuisance busy. This in mind, she forced a patient expression as she stood at Chun's shoulder. As he walked, Chun periodically reached out to feel material. A sleeve here, a lapel there. He glared his disapproval each time. At the far end of the rack, the master of Shenanju stopped abruptly.
This is my costume.
Grasping hands stuffed deep into the rack, from the knot of uniforms, he extracted an ornate outfit. Gold piping surrounded the cuffs. Matching braids hung from epaulets on each shoulder. It looked as if it hadn't seen the light of day since the silent era.
That's a little out of date.
Fashion is fleeting, but style is timeless. Tailor it.
Whatever you say, sir.
She gathered the material in her arms.
I will endeavor to find more to complement my costume.
His expression gleeful, Chun dove back into the racks. As the wardrobe woman turned away, she made an important career decision. If this uniform actually made it into the final print, she would petition to have her name struck from the film's credits. For the survival of the uniform into the finished print would be a sign of something much larger, a box office bomb. Eyeing the garish uniform, she doubted her career would survive an explosion of that magnitude. William darted a glance at Lester. Sweat dotted his upper lip.
I think he's gonna be gone for a while.
The simple boom shot they'd just finished had taken more than 40 minutes. The crew was setting up to film the same shot from a different angle. Lester Craig nodded anxiously. Cold perspiration stained his underarms.
Now would be a good time, while they're busy.
A couple of the other guys who had driven the other trucks onto the lot traded glances.
The setups aren't taking long.
The one who spoke glanced back nervously toward the truck bomb that had been parked closest to the outdoor set on which they stood. Nervous red blotches had erupted all across his chiseled face and tanned neck.
They could be ready any minute.
All nine of the bombers wanted desperately to leave, yet not one of them moved. Fear of the crazed Asian screenwriter rooted them in place. Lester's panicked eyes scanned the New York set. There was still no sign of the Psycho Korean.
Look, we don't have a whole hell of a lot of time to get out as it is. Either we get blown to bits, or he kills us as we try to escape.
He's so damn fast, though. And he sneaks up on you like a friggin' cat. I bet he's out there right now, watching us.
Nine pairs of worried eyes scanned the area.
This is ridiculous. We're gonna be blown up, for Christ's sake. I'm taking my chances.
Shoulders tensed, he took a single sidestep from the group. The rest of the men held their breath. Nothing happened. The demented old Asian who had filled their lives with fear for days didn't come swooping like an angry hawk out of the shadows. Lester took another hesitant step. Then another. The crew failed completely to notice they were so occupied with their own tasks. Lester made his increasingly rapid way through the cluster of technical and service people toward the edge of the set. He was home free. It was clear the old man wasn't hiding nearby after all. The fuse was lit for the rest. They had almost no time left. The remaining extras went from 0 to 60 in 1 second. They flew, running, shoving, screaming across the set. Scripts and wires flew everywhere. Booms toppled into cameras in their frantic rush for safety.
What the hell?
A cameraman was pushed into Arlen Dougal. Staggering, he looked up in time to see his handful of extras fleeing the set like the people of Pompeii before the rushing lava. Startled, his first thought was that Chun had returned to the set, but the old Korean was nowhere to be seen. And soon, neither were his extras. The freeway congestion gave way near an off-ramp. It was a mad dash to the Hollywood studios of Taurus. To Remo, the time spent in the limo seemed longer than the plane ride that had preceded it. Remo was greatly relieved to see the familiar broad white walls of the studio and the huge silver water tower rising high above the lot. He had feared they'd find nothing more than a smoking crater. The limo squealed to a stop at the main gates. Unimpressed by one limousine in a town of thousands, the guard on duty was taking his time walking from his shack until Quintley Tortilli shoved his frantic, knotted face out the back window.
Get your fat ass out of the way!
The guard recognized him at once. Running into the booth, he raised the wooden arm. As the limo sped onto the lot, Tortilli smiled tightly at Remo.
Fame has its perks.
Yeah, it gets you into the belly of a bomb that much faster.
Remo scanned the area for Chun as they raced deeper into the tight cluster of whitewashed buildings. Chun sat on a squat stool in the wardrobe trailer. His pipe stem arms were stretched out wide as the wardrobe mistress fussed around the hem of his uniform. Three body-length mirrors, the two on either side angled slightly inward, stood across from the master of Shinanju. He was admiring his reflection in the polished glass, his eyes moist.
If only Remo could see me now.
The wardrobe mistress knew by now that Remo was the old man's son. Adopted, but a good boy nonetheless, most of the time.
I'm sure he'd like it.
Perhaps. Perhaps not. My son wears underwear as a shirt and calls it style. However, it would be nice to have someone to show off to. Have you contacted the magicians Bindle and Marmelstein as I have instructed?
They're out to lunch.
Remo has said that about them many times. Have they left the studio?
That's what they said at the front office.
Why would they not eat here? The dining hall of the Commissar now serves adequate rice.
That seems like all they serve here now. Maybe they don't like rice.
The wardrobe mistress straightened, rubbing her lower back.
All finished.
All thoughts of the studio executives were banished. Chun turned to examine himself in the mirrors. The old-fashioned commissioner's dress uniform he had chosen was not enough for the master of Shinanju. He had garnished it with his own small touches. In addition to the gold braids, cuff stripes, and shoulder boards that had originally been on the dark blue suit, he had added every police medal he could find on every other uniform and in every case in the wardrobe trailer. With all of these arranged around the chest and back of the uniform, the old Korean now looked like a communist premier Christmas tree hybrid. He had decided that blue was too somber a color for him, and so had collected a bright green woman's scarf from a wall peg. He had instructed the wardrobe mistress to pin the scarf under the epaulette of his right shoulder and then pull it to the left side of his shiny leather belt. His holster was empty, for he refused to carry a handgun. In it, he had arranged a pair of fiery red gloves. They spilled out near the knot in his makeshift sash.
It is perfect.
Maybe I should redo that cuff.
Chun had noticed her stall tactics early on. He had encouraged her to move more quickly. The master of Shenanju shook his head. He stepped grandly from the stool.
It is magic time.
Chun gathered up one last garment from the floor. Somehow, he had managed to locate a Napoleon hat. The woman still had no idea where he'd found that item. He'd had to stuff it with a dress shirt in order to make it fit. Chun perched the hat on his bald head. He examined his image in the mirrors one last time before turning.
I am ready to make history.
Huge black boots, polished to a blinding gloss, shone as the tiny Korean marched from the trailer. Remo spotted the truck immediately. The Big Plots rental was parked near the front of Soundstage 2, its back closed tightly. He sprang from the limo and ran to the truck. No one in the immediate vicinity seemed interested in either him or the vehicle. If it had belonged to a film that was being shot on the Taurus lot, someone would have been yelling at him to get away from it by now. Quickly, Tortilli jogged up from the limo.
What's wrong?
There's the first bomb.
Remo jerked a thumb toward the truck. Tortilli blanched.
Should we drive it out of here?
That's one way to clear freeway congestion. We have to figure out a way to disarm it.
He reached for the lock on the truck's back door. Tortilli leaped between him and the truck.
Wait a minute. You can't even figure out how to run a radio.
Are you volunteering?
Hey, I only do movie explosions.
Tortilli took a nervous step back. As the director watched anxiously, Remo snapped the thick chain that had been wrapped around the rear handle. Tortilli held his breath as Remo threw open the door. The bomb didn't go off.
Oh, thank God.
Tortilli wiped the side of his face with the back of his sleeve. He'd been afraid that the bomb was somehow wired to the handle. When he inhaled, the biting stench from 2.5 tons of ammonium nitrate left baking in the Californian sun burned his nostrils.
Oh, Jesus! What is that stink?
Retching, he pulled the lapel of his polyester suit jacket over his mouth and nose. Remo kept his own breathing shallow as he climbed into the fetid trailer. Wan light filtered through the translucent plastic roof. Ominous piles of fertilizer lurked in the shadows.
Hey, Remo!
Stop using my name. People will think I know you.
He looked around for a detonator, not sure what he'd do when he actually found one.
There's some guys headed this way!
Tell them to run.
They are running!
Remo frowned and glanced back. Tortilli was looking away from the truck, deeper into the center of the studio complex. The director let his coat fall away from his face as his darting eyes squinted.
I think I know one of them. From Seattle, the dregs. He must be one of the bombers.
Remo stuck his head around the rear of the truck. A group of 9 men was racing madly in their direction. They shoved people out of the way as they ran, fear and exertion filling their sweat-streaked faces. They ran like men who had glimpsed the future. Jumping from the truck, Remo raced to the waiting limo. He flung open the rear door and waved frantically at the running men.
Quick, inside!
Sheer panic offset good judgment. The 9 men scrambled into the back of the car. Remo hopped in behind them, slamming the door on the studio lot.
You've got to get out of here! This place is going to blow!
Their guilt confirmed. Remo needed to get their attention. Fast. Reaching over, he grabbed one of the men by the throat. He jerked up. The extra rocketed off the seat at supersonic speed, his skull impacting with a metallic thud against the roof of the car. The roof gave. The man's head gave more. When Remo dropped him back to the seat, the extra's head was as flat as the bottom of a frying pan. He dumped the dead man into the footwell. 8 pairs of sick eyes were riveted on Remo.
How many bombs and where are they?
Lester, pale and shocked, glanced at the lifeless form of William Scott Kane.
6. All over.
You all know how to disarm him? You're first.
Remo grabbed Lester by the shirt. When he popped the rear limo door, Quintley Quartilli had to jump from its path. Remo dragged Lester onto the road.
What's going on?
Remo didn't respond. Striding past the director, he flung Lester through the open back door of the parked truck. The extra landed on a pile of reeking fertilizer. Hopping onto the rear platform, Remo grabbed the door.
Work fast!
He pulled the door closed on the panicked would-be bomber, crushing the lock to prevent escape. Jumping down, Remo hurried over to the limousine. When he stuck his head inside, seven frightened faces darted up from the body of William Scott Kane.
How many more of you assholes are here?
None! Where are it?
Well, Remo would take that minor silver lining. No one left to set off the remaining bombs, but that wouldn't matter if time ran out on even one of them. Remo's thoughts spun to the master of Shinanju. Fear for Chun's safety kept him from asking how soon the bombs were set to go off. By the looks on the faces of his captives, it had to be any minute. He hopped into the limo next to the driver.
Tortilli, get onto the stages! Warn everyone to clear the lot!
Anxiety flooded Tortilli's face, yet the director didn't argue. As Remo's limo tore off in a squeal of smoking tires, quickly Tortilli ran toward the nearest soundstage. When Chun strode grandly onto the set, resplendent in his altered police commissioner's uniform, he was certain his magnificent raiment would cause a jealous stir. Unfortunately, at the instant he appeared, he was upstaged before both cast and crew by some unknown interloper who came racing onto the New York mock-up from the opposite direction. The hideously dressed man, his eyes bugged wildly and his arms flailing, ran right toward them.
It's a bomb!
Arlen Dougal turned to the commotion and blinked in surprise.
Quintley?
It's a bomb, Arlen!
Tortilli skidded to a stop, grabbing the AD by the biceps.
I've been thinking the same thing, but no one
can
listen to me.
No! Clear the studio! There are bombs set to go off all around us! They're blowing up the studio!
All work and movement ceased as a crowd gathered.
What are you saying, Quintley?
The extras! The extras planted truck bombs! This whole studio is one big bomb! Run for your lives!
His frantic mannerisms sent a charged ripple of fear through the crowd. As one, those gathered suddenly remembered the urgency with which the missing extras had been running, as if for their lives. A single frightening moment of clarity swept the cast and crew. Pandemonium rippled out from Tortilli all across the set. By the time it reached the approaching master of Shinanju, it was a tidal wave. People ran in every direction. Whatever they'd been holding was flung aside in their desperate charge for safety. Eyes narrow into furious slits, Chun clunked in his big boots through the stampeding mob. A burly teamster tried to shove the tiny Asian out of his way. His crumpled body fell in the wake of the crowd. No one offered him a hand. Trailing the rest came Quintley Tortilli. As he ran past the master of Shinanju, panic on his face, the old man snagged him by the arm.
Ow! Whoa!
It was as if Tortilli had been hit by a truck. He went from a full sprint to a dead stop. His arm felt as if it had been wrenched from the socket. And as he twisted, trying to pull free, Tortilli was confronted by a being who breathed menace from his every pore.
What is the meaning of this?
It's a bomb, Sidney Toler!
If it was possible for Chun's eyes to narrow any more than they already were, they did. A laser would have failed to penetrate the furious slits between his crinkled lids.
You dare?
What?
Tortilli sensed he'd stepped over some unwritten line. For an instant, confusion vied with fear. Most of the cast and crew were gone already. The New York lot of Taurus was virtually deserted. Distant shouts rose from beyond the facades of buildings.
I have heard this term before. You insult my film.
I don't know what you mean. We gotta get out of here.
A boom is another way of saying that the movie is not good. By saying Assassin's Love is a boom, you insult my talent.
This film is yours? You're Chun?
I am Chun. It is your privilege to know he who will remove your insolent tongue.
Remo!
The director hadn't even seen the old Korean's fingers flashing toward him. He jumped when the bony hand with its five deadly talons locked in place before his face.
You know my son?
Ah! He's your kid! Wow! Must run in the family. Yeah, Remo told me. Remo, this studio's a bomb!
Chun's fingernails retreated inside the baggy sleeves of his police costume.
Explain.
There are truck bombs everywhere. Remo's trying to defuse them now. He wanted me to clear the studio.
Remo sent you here? Where is he?
I don't know. In a limo somewhere in the lot. He's got the terrorists with him. Listen, we gotta get everybody out of here. These things could go off any second. You should get out of here as fast as possible.
When Tortilli turned urgently away, Chun let him go. The gangly young man raced from the deserted studio backlot. Behind him, a frown spread across the parched leather face of the master of Shinanju. Chun could scarcely believe it. His crowning moment of cinematic brilliance ruined by Remo, no less. He thought they had put this all behind them. But here it was again, after all these months. Remo's jealousy had returned. Well, it was high time he put a stop to his pupil's rampant green-eyed envy once and for all. Girding his thick leather belt around his narrow waist, the master of Shinanju clomped angrily off the lot in search of his envious son.
There's another one!
The limo driver had been infected by Remo's sense of urgency. Fingers clenched white on the steering wheel, he spotted the next bright yellow Plotz truck the instant the big car rounded the side of Soundstage 4. It was positioned in front of the bland walls of the studio's executive office building. The big vehicle was parked across both Hank Bindle's and Bruce Marmelstein's personal parking spaces. In the back of the limo, Remo was stunned the executives hadn't had it towed away. On the seat across from him, the terrorists were lined up like ducks in a shooting gallery. When the limo screeched to a stop next to the parked truck, Remo snatched the next man in line. He popped the door and bounded for the truck. The lock surrendered to a pulverizing blow, and the trailer door rolled open. Up and in, he flung the terrorist onto the baking fertilizer. Before even a hint of odor could escape the rear, he yanked the door back down, welding the handle in a crushing grip. With two steps and a leap, he was back inside the limo.
Next, where is it?
Soundstage 5 is the closest.
Remo didn't even have to ask the driver if he knew the way. The man was already peeling across the lot in a cloud of smoking rubble. The next truck proved as easy as the first two. Remo was beginning to think they might make it after all. He slammed the trailer door and dove back into the limo. The limo sped through a shadow cast by one of the sound stages when the driver stared worriedly ahead and eased up on the gas.
We've got company.
Remo leaned over the seat. Through the front windshield, he saw the first panicked man race into view. His face was ashen from terror. The first man was followed by another. Yet another man and three women followed hot on his heels. The driver had to slow to avoid hitting them. The floodgates were open. As Remo's limo inched forward, a multitude of screaming studio personnel came racing around the corner. The driver slammed on his brakes as the crowd swarmed the sleek black car.
Tortilli!
He wasn't sure if he should laud the director for his bravery or kill him for his timing. The wide avenue between sound stages was clogged with people. The crowd pushed against the car, rocking it wildly. Some men scrambled up the hood. Leaden footsteps buckled the roof as they clambered across to the trunk. The sunlight was marred by shadows as the terrified chorus employees slid down over the small rear window. People were trampled underfoot. One woman was shoved roughly from behind and knocked through the open door to the nearest soundstage. She didn't reemerge.
I can't get through this!
The struggling limo driver winced as a boot cracked the windshield. Remo spun to the last five extras.
Three bombs left!
Completely cowed, they all nodded like a row of ugly bobblehead dolls. After a second's rapid calculation, Remo slammed the heel of his hand into the temples of three of the men. So fast were the blows delivered, it was the burst of displaced air before Remo's flying hand that did the actual deed. The two surviving extras watched in shock as their confederates slumped forward. Pressure from the stampeding throng held the door in place. Unable to open it without severely injuring passersby, Remo did the next best thing. Fingers curling around the handle, he wrenched it inward, crumpling the door from its frame. Remo tossed the buckled door to the wide floor. Reaching over the seat, Remo plucked the driver from behind the wheel.
Get ready to run!
Wait!
Holding the man by the shoulders, Remo hesitated.
What? It's just that I've got this script I've been working on. If you could let someone know what I did today, I'd really appreciate it.
The rest of what he said was lost. Remo fed the man into the crowd. The limo driver was carried along with the fleeing mob to the main gate. Plucking up the two remaining terrorists, Remo jumped from the car. He was a salmon swimming upstream as he sprang to the roof of the limo, an extra tucked under each arm. He slid from the hood and met the crowd head-on, butting people from his path by twisting the men he carried right and left. The extras were bruised and bloodied by the time Remo ducked away from the thinning crowd into an adjacent avenue. Sound stages flanked the road. A huge 5 was painted on one side of the nearest big building. Beneath the number sat the next Plotz truck. Remo moved so quickly, the next battered extra didn't even know what was happening until he felt himself sinking into fertilizer. Remo slammed the door down and mangled the lock. He looked at the final terrorist. The man seemed dazed. Blood trickled from gashes in his chin and forehead.
Where's the next one?
In the alley between the creative office complex and the commissary building.
And the last one?
Oh, Soundstage 9, I think.
Remo grabbed the man and took off running again. The crowds were virtually gone. Alone on the road, Remo was at a full sprint heading for the commissary. Whitewashed buildings flashed by.
You don't know?
I didn't park it, I'm not sure.
How much time do we have?
Even as Remo carried him along, the man looked at his watch. He was surprised at how easy it was to read the face. There was no bounce whatsoever to Remo's confident stride.
2 minutes, 10 seconds.
Face hard, Remo's feet barely brushed the ground as he flew headlong into the ticking maw of death. Thanks to his time spent at Taurus the previous year, Remo at least knew the basic layout of the studio. But now he had just over 2 minutes to eliminate the last 2 truck bombs on the lot. And no knowledge of the Taurus lot would help him if the last 2 trucks and the tons of explosive force within them weren't where they were supposed to be.